All right, we've been going through the book of Esther. And one of the things in the book of Esther is that whoever wrote the book of Esther wrote it to tell the story of Esther as they would celebrate the Feast of Purim. Now, the Feast of Purim is found at the end of the book of Esther. And it talks about how the Jews would celebrate the Feast of Purim. And it's all because of what Esther did. I want you to think about that 24,000 years after Esther, passed away, after Esther was done, we're still talking about her today. We're still thinking about her. And the Jews still celebrate the Feast of Purim today. And think about that while she didn't think that she was able to do anything to turn back or to change the bad things that were happening around her, that she made such an impact that even today, that her impact is felt today, even tonight, in this service tonight. The Feast of Purim, I'll explain a little bit about this. The Feast of Purim is on the 14th and the 15th day of the month Adar, which is the Jewish calendar. That falls either on our February or the beginning of March. And it's really what they take the book of Esther and they celebrate the story of Esther. And it's celebrated locally at different synagogues all around the world. Even in Jesus' time, it was celebrated, and it wasn't a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, as some of the feasts were, like Passover, but it was simply you would go to the synagogue. In fact, it was started several hundred years before Jesus' time. And one man I was reading about this feast says this. His name was Edward Mack. He's a Bible historian, and he says this about the Feast of Purim. In succeeding centuries, as the Jews have passed from one civilization or empire to another, so many causes have been risen to remind them of the persecutions of Haman as to make the festival of a triumph over such persecutions both attractive and most significant to them. And then he goes on to list some of those things. The Assyrians, the Egyptians, the Romans, the Russians, Europe in the Middle Ages, and even in World War II, while Hitler started the Holocaust, Jews were able to celebrate the Feast of Purim and able to remember how God had brought deliverance to them. So they were able to use the story of Esther to remember the great things that God had done in the past and really to give them a vision of what God had planned for their future. And it's funny how God uses the past in our life to remind us that He's still with us and He plans to do great things for us in the future. I want you to think about that too as we celebrate or talk about this tonight. And on the 13th day of the month of Adar, they would fast to remember how Esther fasted. And then on the 14th day, in the evening, the Jews would go to their synagogue where the book of Esther would be read. And while they would read the book of Esther, the entire book of Esther, the name of Haman would be booed and the name of Mordecai and Esther would be cheered. And then on the 15th day, they would have a big feast where everyone would eat. So I searched all over Trinidad. Not all over, but I searched several stores in Trinidad to get some noisemakers because they use a noisemaker that is a wooden ratcheting thing. They spin around and it makes a noise. And I couldn't find that. And then I bought a bunch of these because I bought these in the past. And you blow them and they make a whistle sound. And then I brought them out today to bring the church, and I realized mine don't even have a whistle. All right? So, of all the things that have gone wrong in the service today, with the car alarms, all those things, maybe if we can get him to set off the car alarm during the right period, I don't know. But I have a bunch of these, but they don't have whistles in them, so they don't make any noise. So tonight, I'm going to read Esther chapter 7, not the entire book of Esther, but I want you, when you hear the word Haman, I want you to boo, okay? All right, now we did this with the kids. It just happened as a coincidence that Pastor Jimmy, during the kids' meeting on Friday, he had this exact same thing going on where he read the story of Esther. So when you hear the words Esther in chapter 7 and through the first 8 verses of chapter 8, when you hear the word Esther, I want you to cheer. When you hear the word Haman, I want you to boo. All right, so let's practice that tonight. All right, Haman. All right, very good, very good. All right, I know some of you adults, you're getting used to that still. The kids already, Pastor Jimmy already got the kids practicing that. All right, Esther. All right. Okay, so as I read this, when I come to Haman, boo. All right? And when I say Esther, all right. Now think about this. This is what they would do in synagogues, and they still do this today. They still go to synagogues today all over the world and celebrate this, the Feast of Purim. And they celebrate it in this way. And they have noisemakers and things. I don't know. I know there's a Jewish synagogue here in Trinidad. I don't know what they do for noisemakers. They obviously don't use these, all right? Because these don't make any noise. So I don't know what they do for noisemakers here, but I do know that they still celebrate it this way. So I'm going to read this chapter, and then chapter 7 in the first 8 verses of chapter 8. So when I read those names, you either boo or cheer. All right, you ready? Okay. Chapter 7 of Esther. So the king and Haman came to banquet with Esther, the queen. And the king said unto Esther, on the second day at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? And it shall be performed even to half the kingdom. Then Esther, the queen, answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. You see what she's asking for? She's asking for her people to be saved. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we have been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther, the queen, who is he? And where is he that doth presume in his heart to do so? You see, he loved his queen. He couldn't imagine that someone would do that to his queen and her people. Then Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. And the king, arising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, went into the palace garden. And Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther, the queen. For he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. Now remember, the king could snap and kill people. That was we know that from history. He killed a lot of people, all right? It's not good to make this guy mad. Because if you make him mad, he'll probably kill you. Then the king returned out of the palace garden into the place of the banquet of wine. And Haman was fallen upon the bed whereon Esther was. Then said the king, will he force the queen also before me in the house? As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And Harbona, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, behold also the gallows, 50 cubits high, which Haman had made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him thereon. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. Chapter 8. On that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther, the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell down at his feet, and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman, the Agagite, and his device that he had devised against the Jews. Then the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king, and said, if it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, the thing seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews which are in all the king's province. For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come into my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? Then the king Ahasuerus said unto Esther, the queen, and to Mordecai the Jew, behold, I have given Esther, the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows, because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Write ye also for the Jews, as it liketh you, in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring. For the writing which is written in the king's name, and seal with the king's ring, may no man reverse. Now, you can imagine if you read the whole book of Esther, and as you sit in those pews, that the very act of Esther, as you read that, had saved your people hundreds or thousands of years before. And the very way that you could even be sitting there without, you know, being destroyed was because of what she had done. You can imagine how that would have brought some kind of rejoicing as you thought about that. But not just thinking about Esther, but thinking about how God had used her and how through the time since Esther, people had risen up to destroy the Jews. And always God had brought someone to bring deliverance. Or God had brought someone to stand before somebody to stop the destruction of the Jews. How God's hand had rested on the lives of the Jews as a people, as a whole. And although they suffered, although there are times where God had brought them back to Himself, and there are times where they didn't do His will and God brought judgment into their lives, that God always kept, and today, even today, still keeps His hand on the Jews. Now think about that for us. That while the promises that God has given to the Jews, many of those promises don't apply to us, yet God has promised to watch over us as His children. That God has promised to keep us as His children. I want you to think about this tonight. That while Esther feared for her life, and Esther was unsure what was going to happen to her, that she had to step out in faith to be used of God. That she had to take a stand for God. That she had to take a stand, as we talked about last week, and share her faith to be able to be used of God. I want you to think about some of those things tonight. God used Esther to bring deliverance. Esther had to get to a point where she put aside herself to serve God. And I want you to understand that for us to be truly used of God, that we have to put aside ourselves also and to put God first in our lives. It's hard for us to do something without any kind of compensation. You know, we're kind when we want friends. We work because we want money. It's almost as a human nature that we need to receive some kind of benefits for the things that we do. It's hard to escape that. In fact, it's rare to find someone who will simply do something without any thought of any benefit at all. Most of the time, even if we do something good that we know that person won't help, we think, well, maybe God will reward us for that. Or maybe God's watching my life and He'll do something for me because I've helped this person. We're used to receiving benefits from what we do. I want you to understand that God knows that about us. And that God, in a human sense, has set up benefits for us to enjoy when we obey Him. And those benefits aren't always a paycheck that we get once a month. It's not always something that we see the next day. It's not always something that we see even in our lifetime. That sometimes those benefits aren't something that we see until we get to heaven. So I want you to think about this. That serving God has the best compensation over anything else. And that we have the patience and trust that God keeps His promises, we'll eventually see the compensation for serving God. That we'll eventually see, so to speak, and I know this is a horrible example, we'll see that paycheck for the work that we have given to God. For the things that we do for God, they do not go unnoticed. And with that in mind, I want you to think about this thought tonight. We must remember our future. We must remember our future. I think that Esther, even though she was afraid, Esther, even though she was worried about what was going to happen to her, Esther, even though she didn't know what may happen, that she thought about three things, I think, in her mind. And the Bible doesn't say this, but I want you to understand that these are three things that we need to remember about future events. Three things that if we remember these future events, they will help us to serve God. Even though we may not get compensated that same day. Even though we may not get paid at the end of the week for the things that we do for God. Even though at the end of the year, God doesn't always pour down the blessings of the things that we've done for Him. I want you to think about this tonight. That there are things in the future that God has for us. Think about this. Number one, our future home. Our future home. If we've given our life to Jesus Christ, if we've asked Jesus to come into our heart, what is our future home? It's not here, is it? This life isn't the end for us. That our future home is in heaven. And if we can simply keep that in mind as we suffer through the daily grind of life, as we go through the trials in life, as we resist temptations, as we struggle with things that go on in our life, I want you to think about this. Esther faced struggles in her life. She had to go in front of the king not knowing what was going to happen. And yet, she could look forward to her future home. If that king would have killed her, if Xerxes would have killed her as she stepped in front of the king, which was his right to do, if he had killed her then, she could have gone to spend eternity with God. And so often, we forget that our future home isn't tomorrow here on earth. That our future home isn't a few years from now, spending time here on earth. And there's nothing wrong with being comfortable here. There's nothing wrong with enjoying life here to the extent that it doesn't cause us to fall into sin. There's nothing wrong with taking the things that God has placed around us and appreciating them, enjoying them. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But I want you to understand that if we suffer for God's sake, if we go through trials because we're serving God, if we go through some kind of sorrow or some kind of loss because we're serving God or as we serve God, remember what our future home is. It's in heaven. It's not here. I once heard a quote. I'm not sure who it's attributed to, but they said that, you know, a Christian's only hell is here on earth, and yet a lost person's only heaven is also here on earth. You understand that? That while this may seem like a struggle for us, that eventually we'll go to a place that will erase all the struggles that we've gone through. We need to be heaven-minded. We need to be looking forward to going to heaven. Not to the point that it depresses us, but to the point that when those trials, those frustrations, those struggles come into our life, we realize that we serve a God that has something better prepared for us. That we serve a God that has great things in store for us. If we just have the patience to serve Him. So often Christians drop by the wayside. People who have given their life to God drop off serving Him because they forget what they're laying up in store. They forget what God has prepared for them. And I have to admit that sometimes as I go through the daily grind of life, I'm not thinking about heaven. You know, sometimes as different things happen around me, heaven is probably the farthest thing from my mind. And yet, God has prepared a place for me that's going to erase all the sorrows that we have here on earth. In fact, it's even going to erase, it's hard to imagine, erase the joys that we have here on earth. That we'll be able to experience joys far greater than anything we can experience here. I want you to think of something else. Not just our future home, but also our future rewards. There's nothing wrong with working for something. There's nothing wrong with working for a reward. And God has even given us rewards to work for. That there's, think about this as our future reward. There are three different things that God's prepared for us. First of all, it's also the legacy that we pass on to others. Remember Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, we read that last week. About there's a cloud of witnesses watching around us. You know that Esther had no idea that there was going to be people 2,000 years later that were going to be celebrating what she did. She thought that she was a good chance she was just going to lose her life that day. And yet God worked through her. Do you realize that if God tarries, if the rapture doesn't happen, that there could be people hundreds of years from now that are going to walk on the foundations, the spiritual foundations that we lay here over the next few years. People that are going to remember back to the things that we do here, the things that we serve God with here, this week, this month, this year, could be the things that change people's lives hundreds of years from now. We need to think about that future reward. As we go to heaven, as we see people's lives that we can't even remember that we have touched, people that we've made a difference for to the things of Christ, that's part of our reward. I want you to think about this also. Not just our future reward with the legacy that we pass on, but also the work that we do for the Savior is rewarded. James chapter 1, verse 12, talks about a crown of life. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8, Paul speaks of a crown of righteousness that is given. And both of those things are given for doing work for Jesus Christ, for doing the work that God has called us to do, that God has set aside awards for us as we serve God. I'm not sure how those awards are given out, but I know that as we work and we serve God, that He has rewards given to us. And then if you have your Bibles, look at this verse, Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. Turn to Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. Have you ever worked hard for something and then watch it, you know, rust away or watch it wear away? You know, those pair of jeans that get holes in them or that shirt that gets a hole in it or a rip in it. Or maybe, you know, whatever it is, that car or vehicle that falls apart, or even something that you put in your house that eventually breaks, that new Bible that you got that eventually wears out and falls apart. Look at Matthew chapter 6, verse 19 through 21. This is what Jesus says. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt. And we even heard about this tonight. And where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. You understand what Jesus is saying there? I wonder how often we spend so much time trying to store up treasures here on earth that they can so easily go away. They can so easily be destroyed. They can so easily vanish. Wear down, break, or be stolen or taken away from us. And we so often don't lay up treasure where it can never go away. We don't lay up treasure where it can never rust. We don't lay up treasure where it can never be taken from us. We have to keep that in mind of our future reward. Where are we putting in store all of our treasures? Is it here on earth? Then we're going to be earthly minded. Is it up in heaven? Then we're going to be heavenly minded. Keep that in mind tonight as we try to pass on the things that we learn to a next generation. Be reminded of not just where our future home is, but also where our future reward is going to be. And keep this in mind too. Number three, our enemy's future. In the book of Esther, enemies that come against the people, the Jewish people. And there in the book of Esther, Haman was killed. And sometimes we don't get to see our enemies die in front of us. We don't get to see our enemies' judgment. But I want you to understand that there is a judgment coming for the enemies of God. That there is a judgment coming for those people who go against the things of the Lord. That there is a judgment coming. And this should be a twofold thing for us. First of all, it should give us peace that those people that try to go against the things of the Lord, that they have their day coming, that they're going to see judgment. But at the same time, it should be a warning to us. It should be a twofold warning. First of all, we should be sure of where we'll spend eternity. And second of all, we should be sure of where what we're working our lives, where we're storing up our treasure, where our minds are at, where our future is. Because if we eventually fall away from the things of God, that we will lose the rewards, the opportunity to store up rewards. You need to make sure you choose the right side. Make sure that you choose the side of Jesus Christ. I want you to understand that that choice sometimes comes up not just for salvation, but it can come up almost every day as we make choices in our life. Make sure you choose the right side. I thought about this with this point. You know, in World War II, as World War II broke out, countries began to align themselves, many on the side of Germany, many on the side of England. And England sent representatives to Italy. And Italy had to make a choice of which side they were going to go on. In fact, the English representatives to Italy laid out a very very attractive plan. But the man in charge of Italy, Mussolini, decided to go with Germany because the German delegation that was with them said, you know, England is washed up. England is no longer a power. Of course, if you know anything about history, by the time World War II finished, Germany had been defeated. Italy had literally had to make peace with England and the United States halfway through the war. Italy's economy was destroyed. Over 300,000 of their people were dead. Mussolini had been executed by his own people. And you know, it was all because Mussolini was given a choice, and he chose the losing side. I wonder how often in our own lives, for just a few minutes of enjoyment, for a few minutes of happiness, we choose the wrong side in our life. And yet, we need to make sure that while it may be a struggle, while it may cause us problems, while it may cause us friction around us, make sure you choose the right side. Make sure you choose the side that's going to win in the end. Don't sacrifice a few minutes of happiness, a few minutes of entertainment, a few minutes of peace or whatever, for a lifetime of regret or for a future loss in the end when you get to heaven.